Welcome to Life, Lemons and the Law, a podcast from Clark Wilmot. My name is Ed Palmer. This series of the podcast is all about social mobility, which is the link between the circumstances in which you grow up and the outcomes that you can expect in terms of income and career. Now, the issues of social mobility profoundly affect the prospects and lives of young people across the UK, and that's why Clark Wilmot is working with the Social Mobility Foundation to formally support young people to improve social mobility. So what exactly do the barriers to social mobility look like? What are the challenges that young people face when it comes to entering a career such as the law? Well, my guests on this episode, Charlotte Murray and Carl Brown, have both faced those challenges, and their stories can help shed a little bit of light on the solutions that we need to find. Welcome to both of you. Charlotte, can I ask you to start and tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
So my name's Charlotte and I'm a solicitor in the risk and compliance team at Clark Wilmot. I've been at the firm now for nearly 2 years. My role is basically to advise the firm and everyone within it on compliance with the regulatory guidelines.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Charlotte. Carl, tell us a bit about you.
I'm a commercial property partner in the Bristol office of Clark Wilmot, and I act for clients in buying and selling residential development land, and in particular act for quite a few PLC house builder clients. Alongside that main role, I'm also the chair of Clark Wilmot's Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Committee. And that's a committee which we launched in 2021 following the death of George Floyd.
Thank you, Carl. Now, obviously, both of you are passionate about equality, social justice, and you've experienced the lack of social mobility that exists within the legal sector, more broadly within the UK, and we'll come to that. But first, question for you, Carl. Did you always want to be a lawyer?
Well, law was one of the careers which I first started thinking of when I was around 11 or 12, because I was always good at school in terms of English, and I wanted a career which would involve looking at documents and also communicating with people. And I looked into either becoming a lawyer or becoming a journalist, and I really decided that law would be the career for me because I thought that's where I'd thrive most.
Thank you, Carl. Charlotte, law always a passion for you? Is it something you've always wanted to do?
So when I was younger, my passion really was a desire to help others. It actually started with animals, and I initially wanted to be a vet. And I watched a veterinary program on TV and just decided there was too much blood, so that I'd help humans instead. And then from there, I thought, okay, what can I do that, you know, that will actually enable me to help people in life? And that's how I really landed on law.
Has there been as little blood as you'd hoped for in your legal career?
Yes, and I've seen no blood in law so far.
Okay, good. That's good. Let's talk about social mobility, the lack of social mobility. What does that look like? Charlotte, you first. What are the challenges that you faced entering the legal sector?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, it took me 12 years to qualify, which I think on its own shows the struggles that some people face. I just was met with walls at every turn. So I went to a state school, and there's obviously a huge thing on the internet about being state school proud, and you've probably seen that. But because of that, I didn't go to the best university, and it was an ex-polytechnic, and that then went against me. And then I did achieve a 2.1 at uni, but obviously not from the best uni. So I just met walls everywhere. And then when I started applying for training contracts, there was a very tick box approach by the firms that I worked for, which I think, to be honest, is firms across the board within the legal sector, or was back in the day, whereby you had to go to the right uni, have the good grades, or know someone that worked in the law firm. I just didn't really get anywhere, and eventually gave up and just decided to stay as a paralegal until, you know, much later in my career, I found another route through alternative means. But it just shouldn't have ever been that difficult. It shouldn't have taken 12 years to qualify when I was more than capable of doing the job that I'm now in and doing well in.
What was the personal impact? How did it feel to come up against these invisible walls that I think a lot of people wouldn't even know existed? I mean, going to state school, that's the majority of the population. How did it feel coming up against these barriers?
It really knocks your confidence. It's so demotivating. When I finally qualified, it should have just been the best day of my life because I'd been working towards it for so long. And it was just bittersweet. And I honestly felt nothing on that day. And it's actually only now, a few years post-qualification, I really feel the love and passion that I lost somewhere along the way. I just felt lost for a very long time and thought, maybe I've just done the wrong thing here. Maybe I should never have been a lawyer. Maybe I wasn't actually ever cut out to be a lawyer.
And were you aware that there was a lack of social mobility? Could you label it as such at the time? Or is it only looking back you can see that?
I had not even heard of social mobility up until about 18 months ago, which is terrifying. I was just of the impression that because I had come from a working class background, that I didn't deserve to be in the position that I'm in, and that only the people that had come from the right places deserve those positions.
Brilliant. Thank you, Charlotte. Carl, let's come to you. Tell us your story. What did a lack of social mobility look like for you, and what challenges did you face?
Well, by way of summary of some of my background, my parents came to this country from Jamaica in the early 1960s, and they were part of what's now known as the Windrush generation. And they had very limited means. And my dad found a trade as a plasterer. And my mum, like a lot of women from the Caribbean at that particular point in time, became a nurse and worked for the NHS. I went to a state comprehensive school, a bit like Charlotte. As mentioned earlier, I decided that I wanted to become a lawyer. I managed to get into the University of Hertfordshire, which at that time was a recent former polytechnic. And I really loved law. I absolutely, thrived as a student, got really good grades. And then when it came to getting that magical training contract or position as a trainee solicitor, I started making applications in my second year, no success. Then in my final year, no success. And then I decided, right, okay, I'm determined to become a lawyer. And so I decided to do what was then called the legal practice course and continue making my applications with the hope that I would eventually become a solicitor. But again, I got no success. And so I ended up completely finishing all of my studies, not having a training contract, managed to get some paralegal work in between. And then eventually, over 100 applications later, I managed to get that magical position as a trainee solicitor. And I do remember one particular moment when I was sitting back in my barber's chair, a place in Stapleton Road in Bristol, which is a very cosmopolitan area. And I sat back in my barber's chair and I was basically offloaded, saying, gosh, I can't believe it, Del. His name's Del. I've done, all my studies. I've got pretty good grades. I'm just not breaking through. And Del turned round to me and said, Carl, well, I know a partner in Bristol of also Caribbean origin, and he might be willing to mentor you and give you some advice and tips. He put me in contact with that mentor, and it was brilliant. He gave me tips and advice for making applications and also job interviews. And it was really through the help of that mentoring that I think I managed to tailor my applications to sort of start getting more interviews and eventually get that magical training contract. But yeah, it was a real battle and it felt like a real sort of hurdle to overcome. But through seeing the example of my parents and their work ethic and their determination, I was absolutely always convinced that if I got even a sliver of an opportunity, I was going to take it.
Brilliant. Thank you, Carl. Now, excuse me if this question is too personal, but we've heard from both yourself and Charlotte that state education, you both perceive to have been one of the barriers to entering the legal profession as quickly as you wanted to. Your parents are from the Caribbean, Carl. Do you think race played a part in creating social barriers? And does it continue to?
That's a very good question. I mean, first of all, I think it has an impact on several levels. When I was looking around for positive examples or role models who I could identify with and who I could sense was from a similar type of background, there were barely any role models or positive examples or similar examples that I could see in local law firms in Bristol at that particular time. And so that does have an impact because it's that classic quotational phrase of you cannot be what you cannot see. And it's very difficult to visualize yourself in a particular work environment or in a particular career, if you don't see people similar to yourself or similar background as yourself in that particular area. And then the other side of the coin is that there's been lots of data, certainly over years, which has shown that there hasn't been the level of representation or diversity in law firms that there should be, taking into account the level of diversity in the wider population. And that's a point I'm very pleased to say, which has been conceded not just by law firms, but a lot of professional services firms. And these days, a lot of law firms release their data as well, just to highlight how they're doing on that point. I think the other good thing is that law firms have recognized that for one reason or another, there has been barriers or limitations in that recruitment of diverse candidates. And so they have introduced measures like Clark Wilmot have to try and provide solutions.
Brilliant. Thanks, Carl. Charlotte, it seems to me as an outsider that law firms have this additional layer around the training contract whereby your qualifications aren't the key, how well you've done in your degree isn't the key. It's slightly less tangible. And that seems to me like that's where a lack of social mobility comes in. Is that fair? Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, I should say the training contract regime has changed, and I think most firms have now adopted the new regime, which is the SQE route. And that was designed to make law more accessible. Has it actually done that at the moment? I'm not sure it has. I still feel like people are meeting similar barriers. I think it was done with good intentions, but certainly the feedback I receive from people that are trying to go through that route, you still have to be accepted by a law firm onto the SQE route. So whether you call it a training contract or the SQE route, it's one of the same. And you still have to get your foot in the door. Carl said something really interesting, actually. He was talking about doing the LPC and, you know, he made that decision to do that. His route was very similar to mine. I came out of uni and I thought, well, if no one's going to give me a training contract, I'm just going to go and do the LPC. And then they'll have to, because I've obviously shown my determination and spent £14,000 on law school. And I think that's another point. You know, someone from state school, from working class backgrounds, they don't tend to have that money. So we take out huge loans to pay for these things. And surely that shows something about the level that someone wants something, but it still doesn't make a difference. And I actually then put myself through a master's after the LPC to prove a point once again, and that still did nothing for me. You know, I'm not unusual in this. There's so many people that did exactly the same thing. I mean, me and Carl have very, very similar routes. I did hundreds of applications, got rejected for hundreds, and I did give up until I found an equivalent means of qualifying. So whilst Carl did find that elusive training contract, I effectively gained so much experience in the end that I was able just to apply to the SRA via Silex and just be put on the roll just through, you know, the years of experience that I had.
What would have helped? What would have made the process easier and quicker?
I mean, I think the social mobility that's being spoken about now and the mentoring that's happening and, you know, as a firm at Clark Wilmot, we obviously have processes in place where we're starting to mentor people with CVs and interview tips. So similar to what Carl received from that contact. I do think those things are really helpful. I had nothing like that. I wouldn't have even known who to speak to. The career advisor at my state school that I was at actually said to me, you'll never be a lawyer with A-levels like that. There was nothing. I just could not see a way forwards in any direction.
Carl, you mentioned the mentor that you found through your barber, Del. Should there be a kind of formal system whereby mentors are available to people from all walks of life?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think law firms, I mean, for example, at Clark Wilmot, we've recently launched a new form of summer vacation scheme. And the way we designed that scheme was to make sure that we reached out to candidates who may not have access to professions such as law. And as part of that scheme, for persons who take part or candidates, they then have the option of actually getting a mentor from Clark Wilmot so that they can finish their vacation scheme, but then get follow-up advice and tips as well. The other thing that we're also consciously trying to do as a firm at Clark Wilmot is to offer those careers advice and offer that mentoring, go into universities, go into state schools as well. I mean, one of the things that I was absolutely determined about when I qualified is that as much as I would have lots of personal ambition to try and rise up the career ladder and, you know, if possible, become a partner, which I now am, just as importantly, I was also absolutely focused that as I made it into law and progressed, I'd make sure that I try to be as visible as possible to other persons from less privileged backgrounds, backgrounds which don't have access to professions such as law, and really profile my career and life story, not just in media, but also in terms of going into local schools as well. I've met lots of similar-minded people, people such as Charlotte as well, who have that mindset of, okay, we didn't have the easiest route into law, but we're actually going to try and give back and make sure that we reach out to others. And it's that brilliant phrase that Michelle Obama mentioned. If you make it through that doorway of opportunity, you do not slam it shut behind you, but you reach back and you help others through that doorway of opportunity. And what I'm really pleased about is that now in law, it's persons such as myself, Charlotte, and others reaching back and trying to sort of do that social mobility work.
Fantastic. Thank you. Rewinding slightly, you mentioned obviously the mentor that you had who helped you and the occasion on which you were introduced to him. Were there other moments that stand out as being key in your career progression?
As I mentioned earlier, I did some paralegal work before I got that training contract. And initially that was with an organization called the RAC Legal Services. But then following that, I managed to actually get a paralegal position at quite a prestigious city law firm, Freshfields. And I remember my first few months there, Bristol lad, working in the central London, working class parents, went to a state school. Really surreal when I was walking up through London thinking, wow, I can't actually believe I'm here. And then I'd say one of the big breakthrough moments is when I got requests from senior lawyers who I'd been working with that they'd want to work with me again, that they were impressed with my initial work, but they actually wanted to engage me on further projects or transactions. And that really gave me the confidence that I do actually belong in a law firm and in the legal profession. And so that was definitely one of the key moments for me.
Hearing your stories, it seems like the key to your success has been your individual proactivity. You've had to make decisions and think for yourselves in a way that perhaps not everybody does. And maybe that's the key to the lack of social mobility in the UK, the lack of a support network, the lack of reference points and role models that you've mentioned, which moves us on to the Social Mobility Foundation and their initiatives with Clark Wilmot. So Charlotte, let's start with you. Are you involved with the Social Mobility Foundation? And if so, can you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, so I am involved. I'm part of the community team in the London office. So each office has its own community team, and they're responsible just for spreading the word about social mobility within each office and what it means. I mean, I think we held a social mobility tea. It was actually a social mobility spelt with T-E-A at the end, and it was tea and cakes in each of the offices. And it was really interesting just to sit down with people and realize how little people actually knew about social mobility. And I was one of many who had not heard of it beforehand. I mean, that's shocking that it's just not really a spoken about topic, and it's really just gaining traction now. But certainly within each of the offices, there's volunteering that's underway. And we are still in the infancy of, you know, our partnership with them. But we are, as Carl mentioned earlier, going into schools and helping with CVs and helping to mentor people as a firm. I should say as well, separately alongside that, I independently mentor two people a year. So I think there's a lot going on, and there's people that are really keen to help as well. There's a lot of people within the firm that really want to be involved. Watch this space. It will only gain traction from here.
Does it allow you, Charlotte, to address some of the injustices that you felt coming through the system?
Absolutely. I see people that face a similar struggle, and it is just a different person, but same story every single time with just slight nuances. Carl mentioned a quote from Michelle Obama. There's a quote that I've lived by since I started in law, which is, don't look down on someone unless you're helping them up. And that sticks with me every single day. the thing that's really going to make you thrive is helping other people up, because then they'll build you up as well when you end up with a huge support network around you. You should never walk through and shut the door, like Carl said. You always, always, always help. I think that's where the sense of belongings come from. It feels like I've finally got to a stage where I can actually help others in their careers, not just in my role in risk and compliance, but actually help people to go through that ladder and smash down the ceilings that are just there constantly and shouldn't be.
I love that. Don't look down on someone unless you're helping them up. That's brilliant. Thank you, Charlotte. Carl, you spoke about the fact that you mentor, and that has always been an ambition of yours, and it has always been important to you. Are you doing that in conjunction with the Social Mobility Foundation? How are you involved?
Well, at this stage, I'm not directly involved because I'm doing a lot of support work through my role with the Clark Wilmot Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Committee. But outside of my day job, I've already got a social mobility role as a social mobility ambassador for the Law Society of England and Wales. And that involves, as I've been doing for quite a number of years, going into local schools, giving my career story. I've done lots and lots of mock interviews as well. Social mobility, it's almost become a slight second career of mine, actually. And what I found is that a lot of students who came from backgrounds like myself and Charlotte, they've got the core skills and qualities, but sometimes what differentiates them from students who, say, for example, went to independent private schools is that soft skills, which you can take for granted once you're in a profession such as law, isn't something which all young people have, you know, at their particular stage. And so it's helping their soft skills development. The other thing that I found with social mobility as well is that if you're from less privileged backgrounds, then you don't necessarily have those connections. And so quite often students who have gone to independent private schools, their parents are from professions. They've got family friends who are from professions. And what used to happen, sadly, in the past at a lot of law firms is that when it came to things like work experience, it would be family friends who would get those initial doorways of opportunity. That would then make their CV look better. And it would almost end up being a cycle where that segment of opportunity would keep going to certain sections of society. They would then get the breakthrough, and then they would eventually end up making it into professions such as law. And so what I think we've got to do in terms of social mobility is almost break that cycle. So making sure that soft skills development is available to everyone, and also those opportunities to get that initial work experience is open to the best and talented from all diverse backgrounds, so that when it does come to making applications for what's now the SQE, they've also stand a competitive chance of getting that experience. And
brilliant. Thank you. You're so right about those intangible soft skills. Do you think that you've been successful in your mentoring? Have you been able to provide young people with the advice, the inspiration that perhaps you didn't have access to when you were coming through? Do you think it's working?
That's a question I often ask myself, Ed, actually. And I think it's probably difficult to get tangible results, because you give advice and you give careers tips and sessions to a whole number of students and young people, and sometimes you never quite know how their career stories have followed up. But what really gave me encouragement and solace recently, and I won't mention his name, but someone who is also a thriving solicitor at Clark Wilmot mentioned to me that one of the reasons why he joined Clark Wilmot was because he'd read a media interview about me or with me, where I was essentially giving my career story and also giving a summary of what my career is now like at Clark Wilmot. And he said that actually encouraged him that he would be able to make an application to Clark Wilmot and also forge a successful career. And so, yeah, it's difficult sometimes to know whether there's any tangibles, but certainly when I hear anecdotes like that, it does give me encouragement that I am at the very least having some positive impact.
Yeah, fantastic. That sounds like a tangible result to me. Charlotte, what advice would you give to the younger you, perhaps the you who's at the start of that 12 years that it took you to qualify? What advice would you give them to either shorten that journey or keep them going?
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? I was just thinking about that whilst Carl was talking. And, you know, my career journey, and I'm sure Carl feels the same about his, it's given me such a drive and determination and even more of a focus to help people from less privileged circumstances in life. That I'm not sure I'd actually change anything, as mad as that sounds, but I would at least tell myself that one day I would succeed and would feel that belonging that I was searching for.
Brilliant answer. Thank you. Carl, what about yourself? Would there be any advice or words of inspiration you give to your younger self?
The two words that I would definitely say to my younger self is be bold. When I was at school and I had those aspirations to become a lawyer, I always felt that I would have the ability and skills to thrive in a profession such as law. But there was always an element of self-doubt, particularly as I made it through university and I met students from more privileged backgrounds. There was always that nagging voice at the back of my brain just saying to me, "You know, do you actually belong here, Carl? Can you actually make it despite, you know, your sort of conscious self-determination?" And so I would say, be bold, be ambitious. There's nothing wrong, Carl, with being ambitious. You have a right to be as ambitious as anyone else. And then I think the other tip or advice that I would give to myself is another quote. I do love my quotes. And it's something I read that George Bernard Shaw once wrote. The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for circumstances they want. And if they cannot find them, make them. And that's something which I've actually adopted in recent years, that if the circumstances that I want aren't initially available, then why don't I try and go out and make some of those circumstances? And so by way of very quick example, I mentioned I'm a property lawyer, but what I found through my work is that the Bristol property industry isn't as diverse as it perhaps could be. And so in 2019, I decided, right, I'm actually going to do something about it. And so I launched something called the Bristol Property Inclusion Charter to try and boost diversity and inclusion in the Bristol property sector. We started with 16 founder companies and organizations as signatories, and we've now got over 100. And Clark Wilmot have provided great support as a sponsor for that particular charter. And it's really grown and grown. We're doing various initiatives such as property careers films, foundation classes to give people an insight into a property career. So my advice to my younger self would be bold. And if you don't see the circumstances you want, go out and make them.
I just think that was a really lovely, obviously didn't know much, Carl, about your background, but very, very inspiring to hear it.
Likewise, Charlotte. Yeah, really good to hear your background. And yeah, I identified with basically almost everything that you said.
Yeah, same.
Carl, Charlotte, thank you very much indeed for joining the podcast.
No, thank you very much, Ed. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much indeed to Charlotte and Carl for coming on Life, Lemons and the Law. And thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to find out more about the Social Mobility Foundation and Clark Wilmot's work in this area, you'll find the links in the show notes. Please do join us for the next episode. Like and subscribe and all that. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.